If you want the productivity hack of the 21st century and you want to differentiate yourself from your competition, the people who win more customers that they want to work with are the ones who are able to listen to what their real problems are, but more importantly, what are the problems they haven't said. Somebody said to me once that a great salesperson listens to their customers. And I said, that's partly accurate, but it's not true. I said, great salespeople understand their customer and their customer's problems as well. So if you can simultaneously solve your customer's problem and their customer's problem, because you've listened to what's unsaid, you will be competitively differentiated really well.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far, and I also hope you enjoyed listening to our most recent interviews with podcast consultant Jan Ilunga and Lady Drinks founder and TV anchor Joya Das. Today's episode is all about listening, and I firstly want to say thank you to you, my listener. I really appreciate the time you spend listening to us. I trust that we are delivering a lot of value to you. And I also appreciate those of you that have been sharing this podcast with others. That really helps to spread the word and spread the message of all these wonderful folks that I have on the podcast. Today, I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Oscar Trimboli. He's the author of Deep Listening. He's the author of Breakthroughs. He's the host of the Deep Listening podcast. He's a professional speaker and a mentor. Oscar teaches people how to be more effective with their listening. He realized that he had a gift for listening to people in a way that made them feel special and in a way that got him results. So he embarked on a journey of understanding and deconstructing what he did unconsciously. His vision now is to create 100 million deep listeners in the world by 2030. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. Now, if you don't yet have an account, don't worry, just click on the blue Take a Peek Inside button. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful, so go check it out. In our discussion today, Oscar talked to me about three simple things everyone can do to become better listeners. We talked about the importance of silence. And we talked about how a simple phrase, "I'm sorry, I got distracted," can lead to really deep listening. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and listen deeply to my conversation with Oscar Trimboli. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast from just up the road from me, really, Sydney, Australia, Oscar Trimboli, who's the author of Deep Listening and Breakthroughs. He's the host of the Deep Listening podcast. He's a professional speaker and a mentor. Now, Oscar teaches people how to be more effective with their listening. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Oscar. It's a real privilege to have you here as a guest.
Yeah, thanks, Jürgen. I'm really looking forward to listening to you today too.
Now, Eric Johnson, who was on episode 157 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested we speak with you, Oscar. So big hello to Eric.
Yeah, he's made a huge impact in the way I transmit my message around 100 million deep listeners in the world. An enormously skilled communicator.
Yeah, he is. He was wonderful on the podcast episode that we had him on. I've been listening to a lot of his material, and I believe with his support, you've recently won an award for your own podcast.
Yeah, thanks to my listeners and the great work they've been doing in helping me to create the Deep Listening podcast. We won an award from Apple Australia, top 20 podcasts by their editorial panel last year, which is great. But what was really exciting about it, I was the only independent on that list. The rest were media companies. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to be recognized. Funny story though, Jürgen, when I got the email the night before the formal announcement, which is just a press release, I got this email in my inbox and I thought it was spam. I thought it was somebody trying to hack me or something like that. Anyway, I realized it was a real email after I checked with one of the technical people. And I thought, oh, I have to send them an email and thank them. So I spent a moment composing an email and I thought about it and I moved things around. And after about 5 minutes, I sent this very long thank you for recognizing somebody's work who's slaving out the back by themselves kind of thing. And I thought, oh, okay, I wonder what they'll say in return. And almost instantly, I got a reply.
Yeah.
Saying it's an unmonitored email address.
Okay.
I don't know what qualified me for the top 20, but based on the feedback I got from the audience, I know they find the interviews fascinating with professional listeners.
Well, congratulations. And we will touch on that podcast later because I know you've had some really awesome guests on there and some high profile guests as well, which is pretty impressive. So we'll touch on that later. Now, you're really passionate about using the gift of listening to bring positive changes in the world and in workplaces and maybe all around our environment. And your vision is to create 100 million deep listeners in the world by 2030, I think you said.
Yeah.
Before we start talking about all things listening, let's hear a little bit more about your background. So how did you get to where you are today and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Yeah, look, the speed date version is really simple. Son of two first-generation migrants from Italy. My dad talked about work ethic. You can never be the smartest in every room, but you can be the hardest working. And I spent a lot of time concreting in school holidays with my dad. That was his profession, and I do call it a profession because if concrete doesn't work, your house falls down. That's got some pretty big implications. But he always said to me, accountants are never going to be out of work, Oscar. Make sure when you go to university, you study accounting, which I did. And because I had a work ethic, I thought it was a bit, a bit rich to just study full time. So I studied part time and I worked full time. And 6 weeks into my accounting career, my manager pointed out that I was transposing numbers consistently. In fact, he read out 20 phone numbers to me. I only got 16 of them right and the other four got wrong, but every one of those that was wrong, I transposed a number. So basically said, your career in accounting's over. What are you going to do? I basically cried at 18 and said, I don't know. And how am I going to pay for my books at university? Anyway, his boss came in 2 weeks later and said, hey, I might have a solution. We're on manual spreadsheets. A4 and A3 pieces of paper in those days. So I'm dating myself here, Jürgen, before personal computers.
Yeah.
He said, these things called personal computers are coming along. So what do you know about computers? And I said, nothing. And he goes, great. So we won't be lying to each other about technology from here on in. I trust you. I know you're a hard worker. Why don't you go and install these things? So I furiously read all the manuals and this was before the internet, so you couldn't go and Google things. And thus became a career in technology that went through help desk and training and consulting and running project teams, running engineering teams, running sales teams, running marketing teams. I always joke I did every job except finance. And so I ended up in careers in big software companies and organizations like Vodafone in mobile phone product development. It was in the days where we're just moving from voice to data. So that was a pre-G days. We had this thing called WAP, and it was called for Wireless Access Protocol, and it was the most absurd, slower system and not open to anything in the world, and it failed miserably. But that was my learning at the time. Sometimes innovation's too early. That was my learning from an innovation point of view. And while I was there, some people at Microsoft were trying to flog some mobile phone software to Vodafone, and they asked me if I'd be interested in a job there. And 11 years later, I ended up being a marketing director there and running $1 billion division, the Microsoft Office division, and right at the point in time where they had to move from a one-off charge somebody for their software usage to an ongoing subscription licensing model. But right at the end of that, a great boss said to me, Oscar, if you could code the way you listen, you'd change the world. And in that spark, in that moment, I started to connect a whole bunch of dots backwards in my life about why was the hub connecting migrants and English speakers at school, the jocks and the nerds at school, why I was always great at creating customer connections, why I was always considered absurd for forcing my team to listen to customers in the contact center before we developed the product. For most small businesses, you'd think that's bizarre, but for bigger businesses, quite unusual to have an intimate relationship with customers. So listening formed this golden thread through my career, but it was only in that moment where this manager said to me, if you could code how you listen, you could change the world, because the way I feel heard when you listen to me, not only do I feel heard, but you see who I really am. He says, that's so powerful. It makes a big difference. I don't know if you know that, Oscar. Eventually, that ended up in the last 5 years with me being commercially obsessed about the cost of not listening in workplaces and organizations.
So how did you go from that realization then to saying, well, how can I teach other people this skill that you obviously you kind of acquired along the way and you just honed without really focusing on it?
I mentioned earlier on that Microsoft had to make this huge adjustment from selling software in a box and selling software on DVDs to large organizations to selling software via the internet and selling it every month. So it was a massive transformation in the technology industry, and in the industry lingo, it's called moving to the cloud. But the reality is that's just a transmission mechanism for software. What fundamentally changed for Microsoft's 30,000 reseller organizations was the way their balance sheet, their profit and loss, and the way they pay commissions radically would change. Now, here's where my accounting career came into good use. I started a journey of briefing all of the resellers, the reseller owners, the reseller CEOs, about the business implication of this technology change. And Microsoft globally were telling them about the technology impacts. But I could see this was transforming the balance sheets of businesses, the profit and losses of businesses, the way they paid commissions, the way the businesses themselves could be valued. And I started to get requests to run workshops and conferences. And then people started to approach me from these organizations, some 50 people, some 100 people, some 1,000 people, saying, can you come to our leadership team and explain that? Because you're the only one who helps us make sense of the business implication of the technology rather than the technology alone. And my boss at the time, Tracy, said to me, I think that's your calling. Do you know about executive coaching? I said, no, what's executive coaching? And she said, oh, it's a whole profession. Go and check it out. So Google was around then. So, you could go and search for things. And yeah, I discovered this whole profession and spent the best part of 3 years reaching the highest certification I could without being a consultant coach, but an internal coach in our organization. But in the middle of that, I also rebuilt the Microsoft graduate program in Australia, and that got taken to 26 different subsidiaries around the Microsoft world over the next 3 years as well. And that's when Tracy elbowed me and said, your work is done here. You've got bigger things to do. And she was right. And that profession really started to put a way to use language around listening for me. It created a syntax and a coding system to go, I'm in a room full of people listening and people are saying I'm the best listener in the room. What are they not doing that I'm doing? And thus began the journey about writing the deep listening book, the deep listening playing cards, the deep listening jigsaw puzzle, the deep listening research. And we're in the process of building a listening app as well. Mm-hmm. So way back when I was told by Tony that if I could code what was in my head around listening, that's coming to life. Of course, it's many, many years later. And when he said it originally, I kind of reacted going, how do you code this?
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, it's been a really organic process. It hasn't been something where I had a vision and I had a goal and I had a template and off I went. There's been so many twists and turns here. Initially, you know, people would go and use it at home after I'd trained with it. And of course, the people who they're working with haven't been on the training and kind of go, what are you doing? You know, feels really weird. I remember there was one CEO rang me up about 3 months in, and he said, it was on a Monday. He says, hey, Oscar, just letting you know, I was nearly divorced because of your work. I was like, oh, okay, what happened? And he goes, well, last Friday night, my wife sat me down after dinner. And I went, okay. And he said, not in a good kind of way. That's, you know, the kids are in bed. There's no food on the table. We've eaten already. And she wants to sit down and talk with me. And she said to me, okay, it's time to come clean. You're obviously having an affair. And he said, normally his reaction would be what? And he'd get defensive and all of that. But because we'd been listening together, he simply said, what's prompted you to say that? She said, you've never paid me so much attention in our marriage in the last 3 months. What's going on? Yeah. And he said, of course, I had to come clean and explain that we'd been working together. And he said, I never thought listening could be sexy, Oscar, but it was.
Mm.
And that's the phrase his wife used, that, you know, the fact you paid me attention made a difference. And I don't pretend to know anything about listening in a personal context, or my research or my work in consulting or my workshops or my speaking is all about commercial implications of listening in organizations, large and small, and government and non-government. But always people reflect that they are going to go and plan to use it at home with their children, use it at home with their spouse, use it at home with their parents. And that's the ripple effect I really want to create.
Yeah. Yeah. And that brings up, you know, the questions of the cost of not listening. I mean, you can quantify a cost in the commercial world, but, you know, the cost of those relationships not working out well, or you know, in the worst case, failing completely is pretty traumatic, isn't it?
Personally, in the top three reasons for, if you look at any divorce research, listening is either number two or number three in divorce causes. Hmm. It swaps position with money, and infidelity is always number one.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Now, I'm fascinated because we kind of touched earlier on that you've got this skill, you know, maybe you were born with it or you developed it at a very early age, and it was kind of unconscious to you. You were practicing it in an unconscious way until people pointed out that you were the best listener that they knew and that you were really good at this. And then now you've developed this into a conscious model, and I know you've got lots of tips that we'll touch on a little bit in a moment. But how do you make that translation into conscious, and then how do you get people from trying to remember, okay, take a breath, take a drink, and all the other little hacks that you have to then instilling it back into their unconscious behavior so that they actually become natural good listeners, deep listeners?
Yeah. So I think the progression for me was moving from doing to teaching.
Mm.
So the minute I did that, it had to get coded. It had to get coded in a way that was relevant to people who were auditory, people who were visual, people who were kinesthetic. So that's one view of how you need to design the way you express this idea so it can be caught by all people. You know, how do you deliver it so it lands equally left brain to right brain? You know, how does it fit for people who love stories and pictures versus those who love data and evidence? How does it fit for introverts and extroverts? And how does it fit for people who struggle with habit change and those who are really rigorous and disciplined around habit change. So they were the lenses that I worked with a number of people in a profession around curriculum design, instructional design. These are very clever people who understand adult learning theory to a level of depth I would never understand. And it was probably one of the best investments I made from my own business's point of view to make sure that how these ideas are expressed can be heard, captured, and acted upon. Because one of the things these instructional designers always talk about is the difference between children learning and adults learning. Mm-hmm. Adults learn faster if they get into application. So my classes are extraordinarily interactive. And that's things that people comment on because I want them to actually get the value of what their insight is and their application immediately within the first 90 minutes. So, you know, you'll have some basic context in terms of theory, but very quickly we're all going to get dirty, we're all going to get hands-on, we're all going to be lifting weights together. We're not going to theorize about the kind of iron that works in a weight well. We're just going to pick it up and go.
And do it, yeah.
And in embedding it, it's practicing off a small base and getting quick wins really quickly. So in the practice, a lot of the time, the most of the active listening movement, which had its origins in the 80s and 90s, talks about paraphrasing and being intently focused on the listener. Sorry, being intently focused on the speaker. But the reality is really simple, that the first person you need to listen to is you. And if you don't have enough space in your mind to be available to listen, none of those techniques are actually going to help. So we're, again, back to the concrete story I talked about earlier on. I'm big on foundation. Mm-hmm. And the model is foundational. At level one, you listen to yourself. And then at level two, you listen to the content that the other is bringing to the discussion. But if that foundation isn't in place, it's very difficult for you. In workplaces today, if you move from meeting room to meeting room or call to call, or you're driving from one customer to another, as an example, you might have a whole story in your head about what just happened in the last meeting that didn't go well for you, and that's still playing on in your head when you get to the room. So a really simple hack, if you travel to see customers, as I do, the minute I step into the building and from the time I get to reception to announce who I am and who I'm there to meet, that period of time is a time for me to go, breathe in deeply. What's my intention for this meeting and what's my intention for them? And in that process, now some people might call that a meditation. I don't. I call it a commercially pragmatic use of time. If your mind can start to push things to the left and the right so there's space down the middle of your mind to catch what they're saying. Jürgen, the difference between a recreational listener and a deep listener isn't that they're distracted. A deep listener knows they're going to be distracted and has techniques to deal with it. And they're the foundational things we talk about even before you start to face the other person or pick up the phone to call them, or you might do a call over Skype over the computers and things like that. So to embed the change, it's really critical that we get that foundation right. We have surveyed 1,410 people as part of our research and building our model towards this deep listening software and creating these rules. 86% of people can't get past level one. They struggle with distraction, focus, attention. They're the three things that come up consistently in the research. No matter which country we're in, no matter what age group we're dealing with, no matter whether they're male or female, whether they are in a personal or a business context, they struggle with distraction, they struggle with focus, they struggle to keep their attention. So that's why we spend a lot of time on really basic breathing, drinking water, and removing distractions. It's really critical. You can't climb higher up this mountain until you get the foundations right at the bottom.
Mm. Yeah, and they're the three fundamental hacks that you suggest in a lot of the stuff that I've read so far. Now, I really love your story about going into using that time before you step up to the reception and announce yourself to, I'd call that transforming your state, but certainly you're making room, you're pushing the distractions aside and making room. And I also love that you said that, you know, the person who's a really good deep listener doesn't sort of claim to be, okay, I'm never distracted. I'm distracted just like everybody else. It's just that I choose to manage those distractions, and I really like that as well. So it kind of gives permission to for people to say, well, I can do this.
Yeah, it becomes easier if you just give up to knowing I'm going to be distracted. If you fight the distraction, you're using your energy and your attention towards the distraction and you're missing it. So you just go, I'm distracted, come back. And here's a phrase I know I will use more often than anybody who's listening to this podcast. Jürgen, I'm really sorry. I got distracted. Do you mind saying that again?
Hmm.
If you can become comfortable using that phrase, you will completely transform the conversation, because it's really quickly a human connection in the conversation. And they've gone, wow, they respect me enough to say they've made a mistake. I'm going to honor that and meet them in the middle, because I'm a human and I make mistakes too. So I reckon that's one thing that people notice when I listen in group settings, that they go, oh, wow, you actually admit you're not perfect. And I go, yeah, are you? And they go, well, I thought we had to. And I was like, no, we just have to manage that attention and make sure that when we are distracted, we just come back in. Look back to the breathing and the state change. The research I did around the breathing was really interesting to me. So I interviewed a world champion sniper. I interviewed a world champion in memory. So they have the world championships of memory and they remember cards shuffled in a deck and they can tell you back in exact order the cards. Mm-hmm. And the world record holder does it in 52 seconds, right? Cool. So it's amazing. But all of them, and I've also interviewed a couple of foreign language interpreters, and all of them use a technique called box breathing. Snipers, Navy SEALs, opera singers, Olympic athletes all use box breathing to get their state present in the moment. And box breathing, just imagine a square box with the lid cut off it. It means you go down one edge of the box and breathe. You hold it across the whole box. And then you exhale, and what you want to do is hold it for 5 to 8 seconds. Now, that's not a modern technique. Eastern philosophies, yoga practitioners will all tell you that's a fundamental part of what they do. And equally, if you go to Native American Indians, either in North or South America, or you go to the Inuit tribes of Canada, or you go to the Aboriginal communities of Australia or the Maoris, they all have words for it. In Australia, the word's dadiri, and it just means that you are present in that moment because your breathing gets oxygen to the brain faster.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great technique. And I imagine if you focus on that, then it kind of develops that moment of silence as well, which is a good place to listen from.
Yeah, and it's no coincidence that the word silent and the words listen have exactly the same letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in the East, and if you do business in Asia, particularly in the higher context cultures like Korea, Japan, China, Indonesia, depending on the ethnic origins of the people you're dealing with there as well, silence is used in a much more nuanced way than Western dialogue.
Mm.
Particularly in places like Korea, silence not only is a sign of respect, it's a sign of authority, it's a sign of power, it's a sign of thoughtfulness, it's a sign of wisdom and sagaciousness, the ability to be wise beyond your years. And even groups of people can be silent together. This is very common in the more ancient cultures, the indigenous cultures of Australia, the Maori, the Inuit. Silence is used in group settings around campfires quite potently, and the tribal leaders foster that and develop that. But for most of us, silence is the commercial break for us to get our idea in. So just practice simply when they pause, just count to three. Mm. 9 times out of 10, they'll continue. And it's just literally count in your head, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 1,000, and you'll be surprised how much more you'll learn just by pausing.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice, the pause. And I remember being in meetings in Korea in particular, but in Japan also, and I learned very quickly that the person who spoke the least in group meetings was the most senior guy.
Yeah.
And some of those meetings, there'd be, you know, the top executive there. And if you applied current Western thinking, you'd think, well, that person was just tagging along for the ride, but they were actually the owner of the business or the CEO.
Mm.
But they didn't say a word in the entire meeting.
Mm. So, yeah, yeah. It's a really common story. I work with executives across the region and North, South America, Asia and Europe. And, yeah, all of them who kind of travel into those markets will make similar reflections there. Mm. There's a guy not too far from you who's probably one of the greatest cross-cultural consultants in the world, a guy called Dr. Tom Verghese. And he's done an extraordinary job of codifying this in the work that he does in his multiple books and in his podcast series as well. And I encourage you to reach out to him as well, because he's got an amazing depth around cross culture that I just salivate to have an ounce of his insight.
Mm.
Ironically, his model, very similar to mine, you can't understand the other culture until you understand your own first, and not enough people take the time to understand their own cultures before they go into others.
Mm. Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, we might reach out to Tom and see if we can get him on the podcast.
Yeah.
Your own podcast, I'm fascinated. You've got some really high-profile guests there, and you've also you do something that I really like, which is, what can we learn from, for example, a doctor? So why should a doctor listen, but what can we learn from a doctor? And I think one of your most recent ones was curing cancer with listening, which to me is a topic that I'm really interested in, not just the curing cancer itself, but the medical fraternity. How can they change the way they work with their patients by listening and by responding to the patient's needs through that listening?
Yeah, and there's a whole body of work globally led by Dr. Daniel Offrey out of New York, but also Dr. Michael Boyst out of Tasmania in Australia, originally from New Zealand. And there's a movement out of Holland as well to understand how listening can be taught in clinical practice for medical interventions, because when I spoke to Dr. Avi Kluger out of Hebrew University in Jerusalem, who's done some research on this, a doctor will get a 3-time higher recovery rate and a 10 times lower rate of being sued if they spend 90 seconds before they interrupt the patient, because on average, a doctor will interrupt a patient in under 30 seconds when they present. So there's a huge body of evidence there, and particularly in listening to what's not said. And Dr. Offrey, she's written 3 books on this topic and gone really deep, not only from her own experience, but research she's done in Europe and North America about the doctor's ability to, again, stay present in the moment and just be curious about what the patient isn't saying. She told an amazing story where she saw a regular patient of hers, and as the patient was just about to leave, and this happens when you go to see customers as well, they're hosting you to the lift well or just out to the building or into the car park area, and they'll tell you the most important thing right at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a code. It's code for, we haven't listened to the unsaid. And the patient held the door and said, "Doctor, before I leave, do you think the reason I have all this bruising is because of what my husband's hitting me?"
Hmm.
And Dr. Offrey had a suspicion, but she just in that moment she realized that was one of the tipping points for her to go, "Wow. If I just listened a little bit longer, what would that mean?" The final thing they make a point of in the medical profession is they have this term called patient-centered medicine. And there's a strong belief that if you listen to the patient better, the patient takes more responsibility for their own recovery rather than just relying on pills and a doctor.
Mm. Yeah, that's fascinating. Sounds like there's a lot of really fascinating research done there. And I think, to me, the human body is such an amazing machine or organism. It kind of really does want to cure itself. So it's fascinating that simply by listening and making that space that you can maybe enhance that natural occurrence.
Hmm. And I mean, most of us aren't even aware that we have more nerve endings in our gut than we do in our brain. And when we say things like, my gut feel says,
yeah,
there's a very good biological reason why you should listen to that gut feel. And again, the Eastern and the ancient traditions still have lots to teach us that we have completely forgotten in our modern world today.
Hmm. Another topic that you touched on in your podcast series was the question of listening across generations. And I come across clients quite a lot in the corporate world that find it challenging to appeal to the Gen Y, they call it. So, you know, they might be baby boomers or they might be Gen X's, whatever the next one is. And they struggle a little bit to understand how they motivate the Gen Y and how they gain their loyalty, if you like. Loyalty is a word I hear a lot there. And so I was fascinated to hear some episodes there around listening across generations. I wonder if you can give us a few insights there.
Yeah, it was fascinating for me, and I deliberately listened across generations, older than me and younger than me, but I also challenge particularly an ethicist I've just interviewed but not published about how do we listen to the generation that's not born,
mm-hmm.
and how do we listen to the generation that is not alive but created what we have today. So when I talk about listening across generations, I'm talking 100 years each way.
But, okay.
But back to your question, the question comes from a place that I never had a problem in the workplace, and people got quite frustrated with me who were my peers in, as I mentioned earlier, I rebuilt a graduate program which was dealing with those various generational labels that nobody likes, by the way. They're just right. A media construct. The reality is simple that, you know, longevity has meant multiple generations are in our workforce. And what motivates one person at the same age group is completely different to what motivates another person at the same age group. So to put a label on it and go, you know, Gen Y's lack motivation or they don't have a work ethic is complete rubbish. I know Gen X's, Y's and Z's who have a bigger work ethic than a lot of people I know who are baby boomers and beyond. The reality is really simple. You want to get the most out of these generations? Ask them how they like to be rewarded and ask them how they like to be recognized. Those two things are very different questions because some people like me love private, individual, tailored recognition. Some people love public adulation and a big fanfare. And if you don't take the time to learn what that is, then you're designed to not get the most out of them. Now, that can be done in one-on-one situations really easily. But if you're designing programs and you're thinking about workforces of hundreds and thousands, tens of thousands, and even millions of people, you need to have reward systems that relate to both. You need to have recognition systems that relate to both. But it all starts with listening and asking people, how do they like to be recognized? The first manager of anybody, the person who's the frontline manager, the one that's closest to the customer, the one that's closest to the employee, they have the biggest impact because they can ask that question. And if they do, they can have an impact beyond words, that's for sure.
Mm. All right. Thanks for that. That's a really good answer. And again, it comes back to listening. Listening is the core of that.
It's not the answer to everything, but you know, we spend half our day listening, 55% of your day spent listening. The more senior you are, the more percent of your day. If you're an exec in an organization of 10,000 people or more, you're going to spend up to 86% of your day listening. Yet only 2% of people have ever received any training whatsoever. We get more training in maths. And that's for the majority of humanity is completely automated with calculators. So, you know, if you want the productivity hack of the 21st century and you want to differentiate yourself from your competition, the people who win more customers that they want to work with are the ones who are able to listen to what their real problems are, but more importantly, what are the problems they haven't said. Somebody said to me once that a great salesperson listens to their customers, and I said, that's partly accurate, but it's not true. I said, great salespeople understand their customer and their customer's problems as well. So if you can simultaneously solve your customer's problem and their customer's problem because you've listened to what's unsaid, you will be competitively differentiated really well.
Now, that's a piece of golden advice there, and you've kind of jumped to the end of our buzz round. I was just going to say
I can say that again.
I've still got a whole heap of things I'd love to explore with you, but I'm looking at the time here, and I think it's time we did move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. And you've already given us lots of tips around deep listening and differentiating ourselves, which is the last question that we'll come back to. But I've got 5 questions in total, and hopefully you'll give us some really short, insightful answers that will inspire everyone to go and do something awesome today.
I'll do my best.
All right. What's the number one thing you think anyone can do to be more innovative?
I'm going to say listen.
Listen, yeah. All right. Well, we'll accept that. We've got lots of advice in the interview so far around that, and that's great.
Yeah, look, a lot of the design movements and the empathetic co-design movements that you see in modern workplaces today are all based on listening to what's said, what's unsaid, multiple stakeholder listening engagements there. You see a lot of the innovation methodology companies are all going to use some kind of framework around listening there, and the better you are and the more muscle you build for sure.
And I love what you said a few moments ago, also understanding the customer, and in addition to that, understanding their customer's needs and their customer.
Yeah.
All right. Second question, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I have subscribed to emails in industries I don't participate, in countries I'll never go to, in languages I don't understand. So I had to use Google Translate. So I subscribe to a newsletter in Hindi in the pharmaceutical industry, for example, and I subscribe to a newsletter from Romania about software development. And I got really good with the Google Translate, but even the process of understanding what the meaning is in the language started to stretch my thinking to be a little bit more creative. So subscribe to a newsletter outside your country, outside your industry, outside your culture.
And well, that's certainly a new one that we haven't had anyone suggest that before. That's a really neat idea.
No worries.
What's your favorite resource that you use most often, apart from your ears?
Look, my favorite resource would have to be Evernote. Evernote is a piece of software that allows you to capture anything from a website to an idea to a picture and tag it with various attributes. So I'm forever tagging articles about listening, but you can see it's a little bit more nuanced than that. So I might tag it corporate listening, pharmaceutical, greater than 100,000. So if I'm ever looking to write or research or put a proposal together, I'll type that into Evernote and it will give me a couple of artifacts. So Evernote's symbol is an elephant, meaning it never forgets, and you can use that on a computer, on a smartphone, on an iPad, and it synchronizes everything. So wherever you are, you've always got access to it, and you can even do voice recordings and videos and any kind of format.
Yeah, I love Evernote too. Well, I've got a love-hate relationship with it, but it like
I wish you really could export those tags into a spreadsheet. That's my request for them.
Okay. Well, we'll link to the show notes. We might mention them in our social media thing and maybe they'll listen. All right. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
For me, it's always ask them what do they – so I do what I call a pre-mortem. So post-mortem is figuring out what went wrong. Pre-mortem always is I ask clients, okay, so you think you got the perfect plan. Great. Name me three things that can go wrong with it. And all of a sudden they go, oh, no, nothing. And I'll go, well, what about from this perspective and this perspective? And all of a sudden it opens up to the things they haven't really thought through thoroughly. So the way I keep client projects on track is before I work with them, even before they sign up, even before they pay me any money, what could go wrong with this project? You know, it might be not enough buy-in. It could be it's not the right timing. It rarely is about the money. It's mostly about the human aspects of how you implement this change inside the system.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really neat way to look at it because, like you say, often people put together a plan and it's based on the ideal scenario and they don't necessarily consider where the pitfalls might be.
And they often haven't given time to think it through because most people will speak at about 125 to 150 words a minute, but they think at 900 words a minute. So the likelihood the first thing out of their mouth is what they're thinking is a 1 in 9 chance or 11%, right? So if Jürgen, if I said to you, guess what? You got an 11% chance of surviving this surgery, you'd ask for a second opinion.
That's right. Yeah.
Yet when it comes to speaking and listening, we never take the time to help the speaker explore what else is in their head. And if they do, that's what that question is designed to do, to help them process what they haven't said so far.
Mm. Yeah, great advice. All right, and the final question you've already answered, which was what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Yeah. I think the listening is a productivity hack of the 21st century. We spent the 20th century being taught by many organizations that created an industry of people training people how to speak. And all that's done is create more confusion, more chaos, and multiplied it faster by technological devices that accelerate the speaking or broadcast mode. So if I was sitting down with leaders as I do today, is if you're spending half your day listening, how well do you do it? And if you could just get 5% better at it, you're going to be at a competitive advantage commercially in terms of customer relationships or voter relationships as it relates to governments and politicians. But equally, keeping or finding great employees is another way you can be differentiated. And when you are, you get promoted and, you know, you win more business and you're different from the others. You know, people say to me, I don't know anybody who does this. And in my marketing head, I go, yeah, and that's telling me a market doesn't exist for what I'm trying to do, but everybody tells me it's a problem worth solving, so I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. And I applaud you for that, and I certainly encourage you to keep going. I was just reflecting on that, a little bit of distraction there, as you were elaborating on that answer, and that if you Google speaking coaches, you'll come up with hundreds and hundreds, but I suspect if you Google listening coaches, you might not come up with many at all.
Yeah, and even if you do that for listening training, you know, one of the tools I would recommend for anybody, if they want to use a really simple listening hack that costs you no money, use Google Alerts, google.com/alerts. I punch in the name of any client that I have and their company name, or any client I would like and their company name. And it emails me automatically the minute something's published on the internet about them. And that's a way for me to start a conversation with people, which quite often has resulted in me selling more to customers I'd forgotten about. Equally, it gave me a reason to communicate with somebody I'd never met before to congratulate them on something that was mentioned in an article. And that's free.
Mm. Well, there's
another favorite tool.
There's another fantastic tip. So, yeah, we'll definitely link to that one as well. So thank you so much Oscar, this has been fabulous. I've really enjoyed this. Now, where can people reach out and connect with you, find out more, and say thank you for what you shared today?
If you love listening to podcasts and you're listening right now, just type deep listening into your favorite podcast application and that'll find me. If you like to punch it into Google or ask Siri, you just say Oscar Trimboli. There's only one in the world so far, and that'll land on my website, and you can find out about the books, the speaking, the training, the jigsaw puzzles, the playing cards, all these things to keep you on track to move you from an unconscious listener to a deep and impactful listener.
Great. Thanks. We'll include all those links in the show notes so that people can just click through if they're on the blog post. All right. Now, you've probably touched on this as well, but what's your final piece of advice you'd give to any business owner that wants to be a leader in innovation?
Be humble. What you've done to build your business so far is your past, but your future is through a lens of inquiry, and what you know may be what's holding you back. And the most important thing you need to do to innovate may be to unlearn what you already know, because it's blocking what you could do and what the possibilities are for your organization and your customers. So unlearn what you know and be open to the possibility that what you've built might be what's holding you back.
That's great advice. A really good perspective there. And my business coach sometimes says to me, you know, most people, and this applies to me as well, your greatest superpower is often your weakness as well.
I know that all too well, my friend.
All right. Finally then, Oscar, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
I'd love you to interview Dr. Tom Verghese, one of the world's leading cross-cultural experts on how to operate in international markets, because whether we like it or not, whether we choose it or not, the world is more global and we interact across more cultures with more technology than at any point in our humanity. And if that's the way you'd like to structure your business and your organization, wow, wouldn't it be worthwhile knowing how to work across cultures? And Tom's a great guy for that.
Yeah, well, I'd love to connect with Tom. I have read a lot of his material because I did work for 25 years in an organization that I was actually running a department cross-culturally in so many different countries, and then working with customers in many different countries. So that's a subject close to my heart. And also, a lot of the clients we have today are in different parts of the world and work with people in different parts of the world. So I think that's really relevant. So thanks for that
and
suggestion.
He's the most brilliant storyteller. Wow, has he nailed the art and craft of telling a story. He's so good at it. You'll really enjoy it.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that already. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today, Oscar. It's been really wonderful to listen to you, and hopefully our listeners have learned as much from this interview as I have. And I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks for the time, for the research and the thought you put into the questions. I probably learned more from the questions than you realized. Thanks for listening.
I hope you enjoyed that really insightful and thoroughly inspiring conversation with Oscar. Were you really listening? I particularly liked Oscar's points about listening to your customer and your customer's customer to understand their needs. Also, using silence and waiting before speaking to allow the other person to say more. And he had a wonderful example there of the conversation with the doctor on the way to the elevator showing the person out. The last thing could well be the most important piece of information. Of course, there was so much more in the interview with Oscar. I'd love to know what you took away from this episode about deep listening. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Oscar Trimboli. That is OscarTrimboli. all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Oscar Trimboli. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Oscar there, as well as links to the Deep Listening podcast, the book Deep Listening, Impact Beyond Words, Oscar's website, and the resources that we spoke about. Oscar suggested I interview Dr. Tom Verghese of Cultural Synergies on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Tom, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us, courtesy of Oscar Trimboli. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Tune in again next week. We've got more fantastic guests lined up, including marketer Simon Lamy of The Brain Wheel and Harry Duran of Podcast Junkies. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.